The Big Brekkie Show is proudly brought to you by Wellways, dedicated to supporting the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities' NDIS needs. Proud sponsor of The Big Brekkie Show with G-Man on 3KND. Cool and deadly.
Well, my next guest is an amazing woman. She's no stranger to Cool and Deadly. She's a storyteller, an amazing author all the way from the NT, all the way from Central Australia. She's published Alice to Prague in 2019 and Alice Girl in 2020. And her third memoir, Beyond Alice, was released in May 2021. She still works in law, lives back in Central Australia with her husband. She's president of the NT Writers' Centre. I need to say that too because that's important. And Tanya has continued to tell her story in this new offering about her life at a boarding school in Adelaide. Tanya joins me on the line. Tanya, welcome back to 3KND.
Oh, G-Man, thank you. It's so exciting to be back on Cool and Deadly with you.
Well, good morning to you. You are in the desert. You're telling me it's a bit chilly this morning.
Just over 0 degrees. You know that desert chill. Oh, it goes through your bones. But hopefully by midday we'll have, you know, that those huge blue skies and we'll be in a T-shirt. That's the plan.
OMG. You know, when that sun starts coming up, it goes over your body, it heats up.
Yeah, it does. There's nothing like the desert in winter, freezing at night, but by midday it's just beautiful.
Well, let's talk about this book, this amazing book of yours. I mean, you are a great storyteller. A 12-year-old girl thrown into a new world with bullies, cruel boarding mistresses and unfair rules. Let's talk about that. I mean, this is like you've been sharing your life from Alice to Prague to the Alice Girl and now, of course, this new one. I mean, it is a story of a personal journey.
Yes, and I wasn't ever going to write it because those boarding school days were very tough. You know, I was just this wild, naive bush kid sent 1,600 k's south, and so many people have been sent away from their families, as we all know throughout Australia's history. So mine was nothing in comparison to some of the stories, you know, of people taken from their families. But still, for me, it was really, really traumatic. And I never intended to write it. But after I finished An Alice Girl, which was all about growing up here in Central Australia, people said, but the next step was boarding school, because I hinted that at the end of the second book. I said, we want to know what happens next. So I ended up writing about it in collaboration with a number of other boarders who'd endured those 5 years with me, and it became a very healing journey, unexpectedly.
I mean, why leave Central Australia, where it was all safe and beautiful and a great farm life with love around you, and head to Adelaide? Why head off?
Such a good question. Look, it doesn't happen as much now, I don't think, G-Man, but in the 60s and 70s, if you lived out bush, there was no secondary school option. So when I finished grade 7, which was the end of primary school, which I'd done by correspondence school and school of the air, there were no options beyond that. And so almost all bush kids got sent south to boarding school, you know, kids, some kids from communities, most from stations and the like. And the government, the territory government, paid a subsidy to families to send their kids away so they could get this secondary education. So it was almost, it was a fait accompli. There was no choice, no argument. It was you finish grade 7 and then you go south to boarding school. That's how it's been for all these other kids. That's how it'll be for you. It wasn't easy, particularly for my mother, to do it. She found it, I think, as traumatic as I found it. But it was just what was done back then.
So you arrived there in Adelaide at this boarding school, and what was it like in those first days?
Oh, well, you know, I'd come from the freedom of Central Australia and I lived in jeans and boots and rode horses, and suddenly I was in a tunic with a tie that threatened to, you know, choke me, stockings and shoes inside these big stone walls, concrete everywhere. I couldn't see the sky. I thought I'd gone to prison, but on another planet entirely, because there was nothing there that I could connect to or comprehend, and it was all about bells and rules and behaviour. And we were so free-spirited, and suddenly that free spirit was a liability, and that led to punishment and this sense right from the word go that you were wrong. There was something wrong with you. It was, you know, big shame job.
What about the those others there with you as well, all arriving at the same time and all put down to this discipline?
Yeah. For a lot of the other kids, it wasn't as bad because many, well, I'd say the majority came from country South Australia back then. And so they had all been to school, to primary school. And bear in mind, I'd only ever done correspondence school and school of the year. So they knew how to sit in a classroom. They had some comprehension of rules. They knew they could ring their families if they needed to. We had no phone up here. All it was letters. And they knew that their families could come and visit. And I knew that once I was there, that was it. I wouldn't see my family again until holidays. So they all found it tough, but not quite as tough, which was another reason I felt so alienated, because I struggled in a way that they couldn't understand either.
You talk about the coldness of the dorms. I mean, it wasn't just coldness and temperature. Was it the coldness of the whole atmosphere?
The whole atmosphere. I look back now and think, why were the mistresses who were put in charge of us put into those roles? And to me, they were like prison screws, because they were usually middle-aged women, single or widowed, whose own home lives must have been pretty awful if they decided that it was better to get a job looking after teenage girls in an institution. And, you know, they were cold and they were angry and they didn't want to be there either, and there was no pastoral care. It was just punishment, punishment, punishment. And, yeah, their coldness was something I'd never experienced before, because bush people are warm and open and friendly, and this closed-mindedness and this general anger about life seeped into my bones right from the start.
I'm thinking about some of the great things of the, you know, of the fire cooking and the, you know, the great meals, hearty meals of Central Australia that your family would have been giving you. And then you go to this boarding school and you mentioned the food wasn't all that.
It was unbelievable. You know, that this kitchen was cooking for 120 girls. There were 700 in the school, 120 of us were boarders. And so everything was just slop, big trays of grease and slop and, you know, these terrible watery stews and tripe. Oh, God, my stomach turned
tripe
about it.
Oh, did you have porridge? Did you have any porridge or things like that? Or?
In winter, there was porridge, and they burnt it, and it was so bad. I couldn't ever eat it, even though it was the only sort of hot food we had in winter, and we had cold toast. And so, actually, I got to quite like cold toast because it was better than the porridge. And so, you know, you learn to be really grateful for all these strange things.
Tanya, well, what were some of the other activities that you got involved with? Was it sport?
Yes, although I wasn't very good at it because I'd never done sport either. You know, I'd never been to a proper school, so I didn't know how to play games, and I didn't know how to play games with other kids. I could ride a horse, but that wasn't much use. But I did learn hockey and I did learn softball, and you know, I wasn't great, but I did love learning to play with other girls. And then what I learned as time went on was how rich it can be within a sisterhood, which is what it was really. You know, we all clung together. And so music, I had my guitar and I played music. I played Territory Country songs, lots of Slim Dusty and Charlie Pride. And the girls thought that was pretty strange, but they all humoured me. And I wrote stories. I wrote stories about the bush in my spare time. And then I'd read them to the girls, and they'd all sit on the beds and crowd around and hear about adventures in the bush. So that really got me through. And, of course, the education itself was actually very, very good. So I was incredibly lucky outside of the boarding house. The school itself, you know, gave me an education, an opportunity that I wouldn't have had I stayed here. So, you know, overall, I learnt a lot of good things, even though it was a pretty tough journey.
When it came to the discipline, what form did that take?
Well, we were lucky. We didn't get caned. And the brother colleges, all the boy colleges, they got the strap and the cane. We got just like petty punishments. So if you were caught out of bed after lights out, you'd have to sit in the cold the next day for an hour with all the shoes of all the girls around you, and you had to polish them, and you weren't allowed to leave until the mistresses had inspected whether you'd polished them enough. You know, if you left something on your bed by mistake, it would be confiscated and you'd have to pay to get it back. And we had $10 a term, so you could imagine if you had to start paying to get your things back, that $10 pocket money would be gobbled up. And of course, the ultimate punishment, was expulsion, but if you were really bad, you were gated. And that meant, but there were some girls who were gated for a term. That meant you couldn't go out on weekends. You couldn't leave the school grounds at all. And that was, that really messed with kids' head. That was real punishment.
Wow. How often did you get to head back home?
Got home 3 times a year. So we had the May holidays, September holidays, and Christmas holidays back then. And May and September were 2 weeks. And then, of course, Christmas was longer. So we waited, you know, waited for those holidays, and, you know, arrived back into Central Australian sunshine, and, you know, the joy was overwhelming, and spent the whole time on horseback, and then it'd be time to go again. So we, you know, lived for those holidays.
Was it a bus trip, car trip? How?
No, we were really lucky because, again, this was where the government, territory government, paid some sort of subsidy. So we were able to fly.
Wow.
Which was, you know, back then nobody flew. It was incredibly expensive. But we were able to fly, which was lucky because if we'd gone by bus or train, that would have taken out a week of our holiday. It barely would have been worth coming back. But this meant we could get home and get back there in a day. So that, I feel really privileged now looking back. You know, we were so lucky.
I'm talking to Tanya Hislop, a great storyteller and author all the way from Central Australia. When it came to you writing this, third book, and you rang up and you corresponded with those that joined you during that period, I mean, some of those stories that they told, were you all similar experiences?
Yeah, pretty much. Some girls didn't hate it as much as I did, for example, because they were already, you know, prepared by having been to country classrooms, and they were independent. And for some girls, life at home was really bad, so going to school was good. But by and large, we all had the same memories, 46 years on from when we started, of those mistresses and the dormitories. And, you know, a couple of the girls caught out of bed were sent to solitary confinement in the sick bay for 3 days. They were 12, and they were told they'd been sent to boarding school because their parents didn't love them anymore. And so to this day, those girls are really, they remember those incidents like they were yesterday. That sort of etched onto their soul. So it was actually very therapeutic getting all the stories out and looking back and thinking, you know, that was just so barbaric. You know, not compared to what a lot of other people went through, but, you know, from our perspective, that, you know, that's not a great way to, you know, inspire and encourage 12-year-old girls, you know, away from home. So, yeah, we had a lot of tears writing the book, but at the end, one of the girls said to me, "I wish I'd done this years ago. I could have saved hundreds of dollars in therapy."
Having those sort of conversations, I mean, dead right, it does bring about a healing process. And did you hear that from many of them?
Yeah, yeah. Many, many girls who, well, I had about three, I had three girls who collaborated with me fact-checking the story, and then about 15 girls who gave shared stories. And then many, many beyond that then who came to the launch and read the book. And, yeah, they, so many of them said they struggled to read the book if they hadn't before because of the memories it brought back, but ultimately how therapeutic it was to do that. And some of them remembered good times they'd forgotten, and overall it just reminded us of like what a, you know, strong band of sisters we were. We'd become each other's family, and it sort of reignited those ties, and we all felt as connected today as we did, you know, 46 years ago.
I mean, living through, you know, those hardships, and they definitely were hardships. I mean, we're going to move on to some boy crushes. What was that like for you?
Well, the most exciting thing at school was when we had a social with our brother, college. And, you know, so we're all these little girls and faced with these young boys, and they were estranged to us as, you know, we were to them. But I met my first boyfriend at my first social, and he was a boy from the country, from country South Australia, and he walked up and he was wearing, you know, boots and jeans, which is what I'd wanted to wear to the social but wasn't allowed to. And, you know, he said, "G'day, oh, yeah, I've heard of you. You're from the north. My mother knows your father from South Australia and, you know, wheat and cattle." And we started talking about wheat and cattle and suddenly realised we had all these things in common. So that was a bit exciting. And he was very gorgeous, and he's still very gorgeous today and still a really good friend.
Well, there you are. The jeans got you, then. G'day, mate, got you. And, of course, the cattle got you, real country boy. Oh, my God. So out of this story, what did you feel when it was completed and you had it all there in front of you?
I'd had my mother read it, and she cried the whole way through it, and she didn't think it should go out into the world because of, she said there was too much sadness in it for her. But when I read it, and so I had these mixed feelings, I then thought, no, overall, nobody's told the story of the 70s of what, you know, boarding school was like. And across Australia, many, many country, rural, regional kids went to boarding school. And I felt really strongly about telling the story because I knew my story was not that dissimilar to kids in WA and New South Wales, especially top of Queensland and top of WA, very similar themes. And so I felt then a real sense of compulsion, no, this book needs to be out there. And I felt really sort of hopeful and grateful letting it out into the world. And gee, man, I've had amazing, amazing comments from people who'd been to boarding school around that time from all around Australia writing, saying, "This is our story and thank you for writing it." So, you know, it doesn't get much better than that, does it?
No, that's beautiful. I suppose the next one we'll be looking at is university. Would that be right?
Well, the only thing about university is most of my friends at law school have all become, you know, serious lawyers today, and they've all threatened to injunct me if I write any stories about them. So I'm not sure.
That's funny. Look, it is amazing. About your life now, what are you up to there in the centre?
In the centre. So I'm still working as a lawyer. I've never been able to quite escape law. That's probably the greatest thing that boarding school gave me, the chance to go to uni and get a degree and, you know, have a career, which my mother didn't have the chance to do and her grandmother didn't. So for that, I feel very grateful. So I freelance now, which is good. I enjoy that more, and I work inside, you know, companies and groups and sort of advise, which is a lot easier than going to court, which is what I spent much of my career doing. And then in between writing, and then just being so glad to be back in this beautiful country with its huge blue skies, red earth, red rocks. I feel really strong when I'm back in this country. It's amazing how different I feel when I'm in other parts of Australia compared to coming back home here to this land.
Well, you are a traveller as well, and you do like travelling.
I do, and I love travelling, and I really love finding out about other places. And I have lived all over Australia and worked all over Australia, and of course spent a year in Europe when the Berlin Wall fell in 1989 and saw the wall fall, which was very life-changing because then it sent me across to Prague, where I spent 2.5 years. And I go back regularly, and you know, my first book about Prague and the country and the culture and the history there was a compulsion as well, because I just didn't know anyone back in Australia who knew about Prague and the Czechs, and I really wanted to write their story. And in fact, last year, G-Man, I was invited back to Prague to launch Alice to Prague at one of their bookshops. But of course, COVID put an end to that, so hopefully that'll be sometime in the future and I'll be able to travel again. But it's been very interesting being back here in Alice during COVID. I feel so lucky to have been here. I really feel for you people in Melbourne. God, you've had it tough.
Yes, it has been tough here as well at times. Now, what message would you give to those young storytellers, those authors those ones out there that want to put it all down in print, what would you say to them?
Oh, that's a lovely question, Jim. And I would say to them, just do it. Have a go. Get it down. The greatest block for any writer, and I speak totally for myself, is perfectionism and procrastination. You think, oh, I can't get it down unless it's perfect, or you get it down and then you rewrite it 1,000 times only to find out your first draft wasn't too bad after all, if you've still got it. So I just say, get it down, write your story, get them out there, write as much as you can, let it flow, and then at the end you can go back and edit and do all those things. But if you have a compulsion to tell stories, then tell them, because you don't know also how many people you can touch when you read those stories aloud to them, or if you're lucky enough, you know, you can get them printed and get them out to the world. So I just say, do it.
Really great advice. Well, look, it's lovely to have you on. If people want to find your works, how can they find them?
Oh, thanks, G-Man. Well, all three books, Alice to Prague and Alice Girl and Beyond Alice, you can find in any bookshop in any city, Dimmicks or your local bookshop. They all have them. I believe that they're also in Target and Big W, and or at least the latest book is. And then if you travel beyond that, you can go onto my website, just tanyaheaslip.com.au, and I've got a whole page there on where to buy, with all sorts of ideas, including Booktopia and Book Depository online places. So if people want to find the book, hopefully they won't have any trouble. And also, if your local bookshop doesn't have it, they'll order it in for you.
Well, you've got the whole thing down right there, the whole spiel.
Well, no, actually I haven't. It just came to me thinking about it.
Look, once again, lovely to have you back on Cool and Deadly. And of course, feeling a bit jealous that you're there in the desert. Hopefully, I'm back there this weekend. Unless I'm in quarantine, I won't be. But anyway, let's see if those borders come down. And lovely to speak with you. And big blessings and love to your family and of course to that great country.
Thanks so much, G-Man. It's been a privilege to be back on Cool and Deadly, and hope you get back to Alice.
Yes, me too. All right, bye for now, Tanya.
Thank you, bye-bye.
And what an amazing lady as well, and a great storyteller.
Today's Big Brekkie Show with G-Man has been brought to you by Wellways, dedicated to supporting the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities' NDIS needs. Proud sponsor of the Big Brekkie Show with G-Man on 3KND. Cool and Deadly.